What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Gunput and Gadowski Sports Podcast. My name is Ruhan Gunput, and I am a freshman in high school.
My name is Matthew Gadowski, and I am also a freshman at Reedy High School.
And here is episode number 3. We're going to be talking about the NFL draft. We're going to be talking about the NCAA. We're going to be talking about NASCAR making a potential return, among other things. Let's get right into it. How about it?
Let's do it.
All right. So first of all, the NFL draft, it happened last week, and I think Thursday through Saturday. So biggest, obviously Joe Burrow of LSU went with the number one pick. That's a big surprise right there. Obviously everyone could have predicted that. The rest of the draft was pretty weird for some teams. Most notably the Green Bay Packers and the Philadelphia Eagles, who both took quarterbacks really high when they could have, or when they were expected to spend most of their picks beefing up their offense and providing their already, the franchise quarterbacks they already have with more weapons. Green Bay selected Jordan Love with, I believe, the 26th pick in the first round. And Philadelphia selected Jalen Hurts with, I think, the 53rd pick in the second round. And so while these are both backups to their current quarterbacks and Aaron Rodgers and Carson Wentz, the Packers have indicated that they may be going with Love as a replacement for, I believe, the 35-year-old Rodgers, who may be on his way out, and they may be using him as a replacement, similarly to how they drafted Rodgers at a similar spot to replace their last quarterback, Brett Favre. Philadelphia, on the other hand, has not stated that they have any plans to move on from Carson Wentz, but that they plan to use quarterback Jalen Hurts as a sort of Taysom Hill-type player to play running back, quarterback, lineup in different formations, and stuff like that. Eagles also earlier today signed Arizona dual-threat quarterback Khalil Tate and plan to use him as a receiver. So what are your thoughts on these, where they're going with this?
To start off with the Green Bay Packers, the past few years have been really tough. On, we've seen Mike McCarthy leave due to Aaron Rodgers, and we've just seen lots of difficulty like with just everyone having a good connection within the organization. So I feel the Packers are starting to get tired of Rodgers' dysfunction he brings to the Packers, and I just feel like they're ready to move on. As soon as Jordan Love matures enough and they think he's going to want, I think they're just going to get rid of Rodgers and move on with him. So I definitely think this is a sign of the start, as I believe he's either Kurt Warner or somebody, an old veteran quarterback, just stated that he believes that Rodgers is on his way out, like you said.
Yeah.
And then for the Eagles, I see this situation. I think they're trying to do like a unique offense similar to the Saints, and I definitely see how they can use Jalen Hurts in this way because he is very athletic with both throwing the ball, running the ball, exactly how Taysom Hill is. And Jalen Hurts is also going to be a very good backup because Carson Wentz is – he's not injury-prone, but he hasn't been able to finish the last three seasons of his NFL – of the last three NFL seasons due to injury. So it's definitely a concern, and it's always nice to have a good backup, which Jalen Hurts could definitely fill in his role as they both dual threat, being with the ability to run and throw.
So you think Rodgers is the problem in Green Bay?
I think Rodgers is the problem in Green Bay because we've seen the dysfunction over and over again. I mean, it's also – it doesn't help that I see his dysfunction where he's probably getting mad at the organization because –
they haven't gotten help.
Offensive player for the past, what is it, 10-plus years?
In his career, Rodgers has thrown one touchdown pass through a Packers first down draft pick, and that was Martellus Bennett. He's only thrown one touchdown to a first-round draft pick, and I don't think Bennett was drafted by the Packers anyway. And so they haven't, obviously. McCarthy didn't, and the last administration in Green Bay didn't do a great job of getting him help. He had that one Super Bowl run, but since then it's just been great regular season team, and then they seem to melt down in the NFC Championship or the wild card every year since then. So it's been confusing, I think, for Green Bay. I think Rodgers, he may be a source to some of the dysfunction, but I think most of it is just the front office. The new administration, I think, that they brought in, like after last year, in which they missed the playoffs, they completely revamped everything. They got new coaches at like almost every position. They got Matt LaFleur instead of Mike McCarthy, and then LaFleur came in and he led them to 13-3. I think that they could have done really well though if they were to add a receiver. I believe Justin Jefferson was still on the board at that time. They could have added Clyde Edwards-Helaire, who was also on the board at that time. I think it would have been best for them to get weapons on offense, because their defense, I think, for the most part, is like fine. They have good players, many positions. They have what's his name, the defensive back?
What is his name?
I'm blanking too. Is it Jamal? I am so blanking. That's who it is. Jair Alexander. That's who it was.
Oh, yeah.
They got him. They got other pieces on defense. They're solid there. They have Za'Darius Smith, Rashawn Gary, Preston Smith. They're pretty solid there. They have Adrian Amos in the secondary. But their biggest problems are on offense, on the offensive side of the ball. Green Bay last year, they went 13-3, but they were one of the worst 13-3 teams we've seen in a long time. They won
To add on to your 13-3 season, just before we move on from that, I feel like they actually got lots of breaks. As I was listening to Colin Cowherd the other day, and he made a very good point that they played the Mahomes-less Kansas City Chiefs this year, yeah. I believe. And then they also played a few other good teams. And then we saw when they played the 49ers and they couldn't do anything. I feel like they
played some real teams.
You are very right on how they weren't a very good 13-3 team. I feel like they got lots of breaks throughout the year.
They looked really bad at times, even in wins. I think they were closer by point differential, actually. They were a 9.7 win team. And they're not as good as they looked last year, and they need these weapons on offense because they have to build for the near future. I don't think they're going to be Super Bowl content. They're going to be a playoff team, I think, this year. They should be a solid playoff team. It's between them and the Vikings for the NFC North, and I think they'll get it. But I don't think they're going to be a legitimate Super Bowl contender. I don't think they can hang with the top teams in the NFC like the 49ers and the Saints and the Seahawks in the near future. I don't think that's going to happen, and they're going to.
Who knows? Maybe even the Bucks.
Even the Bucks. We'll get to that.
We'll
later.
Talk about that later. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that love's a good insurance policy, but I feel like they could have waited until maybe next year, or at least in the later rounds, to get somebody.
I was shocked. Oh, sorry. No, that's right. That's right. Love thing though. I was actually shocked that they even moved up. That shows that they really, really wanted him, which was very surprising to me because I didn't think the teams before them were going to take Love, and I just did not see that coming.
I didn't see Love going in the first round, even in the
second round. No, I thought he could be maybe a early second round at best, so yeah. I was surprised by that move.
And now for the Eagles, obviously, as you said, Carson Wentz, he hasn't finished a full season and playoffs since his rookie year, in which they didn't make the playoffs, obviously. Hurts is obviously there for insurance and also as maybe a package sort of player. They can run him in situations similar to Taysom Hill and the option plays that the Ravens ran with their three Heisman backfield last year with Lamar Jackson, RG3, and Mark Ingram. But I just don't understand why they would spend the second-round pick on Hurts. Credit to them. After that pick, they seem like they made some pretty good picks. They had the questionable first-round pick when they took Jalen Reagor over Justin Jefferson, which a lot of Eagles fans obviously were upset about. But, I mean, it's obvious, the main thing that they tried to focus on this offseason was to bring in speed. And they have right now they have one of the fastest offenses probably in the league. They've got DeSean Jackson, Jalen Reagor at receiver, Marquise Goodwin, they traded for him during the draft. At running back, they have Miles Sanders, who's an excellent dual threat running back. He's one of the most potent running backs in the receiving game. They have a top three tight end in the NFL, top four at worst. In Zach Ertz, another top 10 tight end at Dallas Goedert. They've got the pieces to do it. It's just a question of how – do they have the star power is what I'm saying. You have the Dallas Cowboys, who aren't necessarily as deep as them, but their receiving core is top heavy. They've got CeeDee Lamb, one of the best receivers in the draft, Amari Cooper and Michael Gallup. The Cowboys, credit to them, had one of the best drafts, if not the best of anyone. They loaded up on offense. They filled their holes on defense. It was a great draft for Dallas. But back to Philadelphia, it's just, could they have not taken a quarterback in the later rounds? That probably would. I think if they Hurts probably would have been available in the next round. They could have even taken Jake Fromm or Nate Stanley or someone like that.
Yes, I believe. I feel like they just thought Hurts was the guy for them to run this new type of offense they have the plan for in the 2020-2021 season. And I just feel like they had concerns that either Baltimore, I believe, which was maybe the 55th pick, were going to take him because he could be a very good Lamar Jackson backup because he's able to run a lot like Lamar is. So I just think they didn't want to miss out. They didn't want to miss out at him because I feel like, Jake Fromm could have been a good option, but he doesn't have the athletic mobility that Jalen Hurts has with that. And I would say Jalen Hurts has just as good to do a better of arm compared to because we saw Jake Fromm's arm really weaken in the combine. So I just feel like they thought he was the best option for this new offense, and that's why they took him.
I mean, me personally, I think that if they wanted an insurance policy for Carson Wentz, the best option for them would be to sign somebody in free agency, to sign a veteran. Obviously, Josh McCown, their backup, he isn't going to cut it anymore. He's pushing 40 years old. He tore his hamstring in the playoffs last year. They're obviously going to need a backup, but to Jalen Hurts is a very risky option to me because if Wentz goes down again at a point where they really need him in a playoff push or the playoffs itself, to bring in a rookie who hasn't had any meaningful experience is a lot riskier option than just signing a backup. They could have maybe signed Andy Dalton, who just got cut, if they had waited a little bit. There's a lot of players they could have gone after, but this is a risky decision, and we'll see if it pays off for them.
It definitely was a risky decision. I'm surprised if they knew they were going to do this. I know maybe they were concerned about Baltimore, but if they knew Baltimore wasn't going to do it.
RG3. So.
Right, they have RG3, but if they just didn't have any concern with them, I'm surprised they didn't trade back in the second round, maybe get another fourth-round pick or something, move back a little bit, and then get Jalen Hurts to get at least something in return, because it was very early for me to pick him. I was shocked by that.
Many were asking for the Eagles to – packaged the Jalen Hurts pick along with the Jalen Reagor pick and traded with Dallas or a team above and go ahead and select CeeDee Lamb, which many are viewing as the second or third best receiver in this draft class, depending on where you view Henry Ruggs at. So that was surprising to me. They did get their offensive weapon in Reagor, who's probably the most unproven of the first-round receivers, but he's speedy. He's got the work ethic. He's got the tools to make it happen. It's just that it was really surprising to see them not go with the more proven entity in CeeDee Lamb, who's spent even Justin Jefferson, who spent his last season tearing up the SEC, arguably the best conference in football, in college football, other than maybe the Big Ten for the whole season.
Speaking of surprise receivers, I was one of the people shocked at how high up Henry Ruggs went at number 11 to the Raiders. I personally thought he was the third best receiver because I thought Judy was number one and then Lamb number two. And they were basically the same. Like, I thought they were by far the two best. And then Ruggs is second because he doesn't have the best height, but he's very – Ruggs is like Tyreek Hill.
Ruggs is the fastest
He's a small receiver with lots of speed. So he's going to be able to run past the defense, but I don't know how well he's going to work when he's – on tight coverages and stuff. Like, is he going to be that best? Because I just like Jerry Jeudy because he's still a very good route runner. And I believe he has a little more height on Ruggs. And he's not slow either. So,
I mean, it is possible. I think the Raiders might be onto something with that pick. I wasn't personally a fan of it. I thought they should have selected Jeudy. But what they might be trying to do is what Kansas City did this past season with their offense, which is like one of the fastest of all time. What they would do is early on in games, especially in the playoffs we saw, they'd fall behind early. And that was mainly because they didn't rely on their passing offense as much early on. They would just grind the ball up the middle with Damian Williams and their running backs. And they would draw the defense into man coverage pretty much because zone coverage isn't going to cut it in that situation. Man coverage is better when you're defending against the run. It's not really run coverage, but that sort of those sort of formations are better against the run. And so they draw their defense into man coverage, and then as soon as they saw that, they'd hit them over the top with Tyreek Hill or Sammy Watkins or Mecole Hardman, DeMarcus Robinson, like all of their guys, they're faster than your defensive back, and they just go and get it like that. The Raiders have Josh Jacobs, who I believe should have been the rookie of the year this past season. He had a great season in Oakland. He ran for 1,000 yards. He was the best running back of his rookie class. It's going to be interesting. I'm not sure what the Raiders were trying to do, but it could be something of that nature.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you. Where they're trying to make their offense one of the fastest in the NFL, and I believe that's one of the main. That's the new era of offense nowadays. Like it's speed for receivers. And then a solid QB. Running back who can just pound yards through.
Yeah. And, and Derek Carr, he's not the strongest arm in the world, but he can pack a punch every once in a while. So we can see how Gruden decides to develop these guys.
Right. Well, they also got Mariota. I want to see their
They QB do have Gruden. Mariota.
See what they do with him.
They got a lot of teams with these 1-2 punches at quarterback. You got the Saints with Breeze and Winston. We got the Raiders and Mariota and Carr, Eagles, Hurts and Wentz. We might be seeing a new era in the NFL in which two QBs, or also the Ravens with RG3 and Lamar, could be seeing a new era in the NFL where two QB sets become a thing of the norm.
Yeah.
That would be interesting. Sticking with the NFL, earlier this week, or last week, Rob Gronkowski, the former Patriots tight end, came out of retirement and was traded to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers for a seventh round pick were traded to the Buccaneers for a fourth round pick. And so now Gronk will team up with his old teammate and quarterback for his whole career, Tom Brady, both in their first seasons with the Buccaneers. Buccaneers now, their offense is looking stacked. They've got Mike Evans, they've got Chris Godwin, Tom Brady, obviously.
O.J. Howard.
O.J. Howard, they might there's been trade rumors, but for now they haven't. Obviously, Gronk, probably the best QB tight end tandem in NFL history. Who is the running back again?
What's his name?
Ronald Jones.
Yeah, Ronald Jones.
Yeah, so they've got very potent offense. Do you think that they are legitimate Super Bowl contenders in the NFC now?
I wouldn't say legitimate. I think the Saints are still a better team right now in the NFC than the Bucks, just because I want to see how this whole team merges, because we saw the Browns last year, OBJ, Baker Mayfield coming off a spectacular rookie season. They have Nick Chubb. Then they added a Kareem Hunt. And then they had Jarvis Landry. They had so many good people. And we just saw how they just fell apart due to the lack of chemistry. So I know Tom Brady and Rob Gronkowski have chemistry together, but they're both on their downfall. And I just don't know how well they're going to compete. It's going to take a few games, I think, at least. So before we really see how well this Tampa Bay team is, they do have a very good coach in Bruce Arians. So I think they should do better than the Browns did, because they were led by a unexperienced NFL head coach in Freddie Kitchens and a second-year QB in Baker Mayfield. So Tom Brady and Rob Gronkowski could definitely lead this team, as it's filled with veterans. But I would not say they're guaranteed Super Bowl contenders, but they're definitely – in the mix, I would say.
I mean, the Bucks have something that the Browns didn't, which is, of course, Tom Brady, and also the Saints don't have him either. Tom Brady, he's been...
But the Saints have Drew Brees.
Well, yeah, but Tom Brady's been on the Patriots for 20 years. He's been through so many different teammates, and he's gelled with each one. He's won playoff games, won Super Bowls with so many different people. Obviously, Bill Belichick was a huge reason for this success. But Brady's close friends with Bruce Arians, and he made it a point as soon as he got to Tampa. First thing he did was he asked for the numbers of all his teammates. He's trying to get oriented, and he's trying to get to know this new offense. I think Tom Brady's if anybody could make this work, it is going to be Tom Brady. Obviously, the Saints, they've been really good in the past few years. They won 13 games last year, 13 games the year before, 11 games the year before, but they haven't got it done in the playoffs. In the playoffs, since that time, they're 2-3. So or they're 3-3, excuse me. So, and they've never made the Super Bowl. They've only made one NFC Championship game. Granted, they probably should have won that, but there's still opportunities even after that infamous blown call. When it comes to the playoffs, I'm going to pick the Buccaneers over the Saints. I just think that aside from Drew Brees, the Saints are – they don't have those kind of players which are going to be able to step up in those big moments. We haven't seen Mike Thomas go off in a playoff game. We haven't seen Alvin Kamara do it really since his rookie year. Tom Brady, this last year he wasn't able to do it against Tennessee, but he really didn't have much of an offense around him. The Buccaneers also have a pretty decent O-line now. They drafted that kid from Iowa, Tristan Wirfs, mm-hmm. best O-lineman in the class, I would say. He's an absolute monster.
You said that – oh, sorry. You can keep going.
Yeah, I just think that the NFC South's probably one of the toughest divisions in football, if not the toughest right now, with the Falcons, the Bucks, and the Saints. Panthers aren't quite there yet, but they may get there. So we'll see how Teddy Bridgewater does. But I think that the Bucks just got to get to the playoffs. Once they get there, they're the last team that anybody would want to play.
I definitely think they're going to be a big competition for everybody in the NFC South and in the NFC playoff race. So I think they have the opportunity, but I'm just not set on them being true. I think they're Super Bowl contenders, but not like the best and most powerful Super Bowl contenders there are yet.
Oh, definitely.
So yeah. I'm going to have to watch the season and just go from there. But as of right now, I'm not going to get my hopes up that they're going to the Super Bowl yet. I know Tom Brady has led lots of really average teams to Super Bowls, but he just doesn't – I feel like he's beginning to lose some of his
– For sure.
Like, goatness. Like, he's aging now, and we're starting to see signs of it. He's going to
be 43 when the season starts. That's
right.
Yeah. I mean
– And same for Rob Gronkowski. Like, in his last Patriots season, which was a few years ago, he was – his numbers were declining. I believe – how many touchdowns did he have? He was like three or something. I'm going to look that up real quick.
Three touchdowns, yes.
Yeah, three touchdowns. That's like – I know he played good in the playoffs, but still, that's definitely a concern because mm-hmm. we don't know how he even – we don't know what he's been up to this offseason, really.
Yeah, he's put on like 10, 15 pounds, I think, which he can probably lose by the time the season starts, but we'll see how he's – what kind of shape he's in.
Speaking of a funny Rob Gronkowski story, we heard – I think it was a – this week, his thingy with the retirement and how he decided to retire was when he was traded to the Lions, and he told – I know you're a Lions fan. He told Belichick he's retired because he didn't want to be in the Lions. So
he just didn't want to play with Belichick. He also – he told the Patriots that he wouldn't have come back to any other quarterback other than Tom Brady. So, yeah, that's for sure. Shifting focus to the Patriots, the other side of this deal, how do you think they're going to do with the loss of Gronk – they didn't have Gronk last year, but mainly the loss of Tom Brady, their franchise quarterback.
I think they just got to start rebuilding now. Like, they lost other key defensive players in Kyle Van Noy. They're really losing their veterans now, and I believe I'm expecting them to go for Trevor Lawrence next year, but I don't even know if they're going to have – they aren't going to be the worst team in the NFL, so – that's going to be a difficult thing, as the Jaguars will probably be the worst team, and they'll probably need a quarterback because I don't see Gardner Minshew as being the future. But I think
Gardner Minshew had a really underrated season last year.
Right. I think he can get them through the season, but I just don't know how many games they're going to win. And I think that they're going to aim to just for Trevor Lawrence too. So we're just going to have to see. I was decently surprised they didn't try to draft like a late-round quarterback. But I do know they signed two undrafted free agent quarterbacks to add on to Brian Hoyer and
Jarrett Stidham.
Yeah, Jarrett Stidham.
I mean,
so
yeah.
And then they don't have any weapons on offense really either besides
Edelman.
They have Edelman
and Michelle. I think that's a good.
Yeah, they have Michelle.
Other than that, it's pretty weak. Yeah.
Right. I think they're going to need to rebuild. I think Belichick really – he drafted a bunch of – under the radar prospects this year.
He only drafted one player. They only drafted one player in this draft. They traded all their picks except one. That was, I think, wide receiver Anfernee Jennings.
They drafted more than one player.
I don't think so.
They drafted a kicker and stuff, too.
Wait, they did? Yeah. No, they drafted other players, but they traded, like, their original draft picks. That's
right. They traded, like, every single
pick. Yeah, they traded every draft pick except Anfernee Jennings. My perspective, I still think they're going to be in playoff contention, especially with the 17-team playoff that's going to be introduced this year. And also, I think if you're going to doubt anyone, Bill Belichick's the wrong person to do it with. He went 11-5 with Matt Castle in 2008 when Brady was out for the season after the first game. He went 11-5 with Matt Castle at quarterback. He returns the core. They lost a few key pieces, but he returns the core of what was arguably, and I would say they were the best defensive team in the NFL last year, up there with the 49ers. They returned Stephon Gilmore, the DPOY, J.C. Jackson, one of the best D-backs in the NFL. And I think if anybody's going to be the one to develop Jarrett Stidham, it's going to be Bill Belichick. I think that they will make a playoff push. And I think their AFC East win streak is going to end this season to the Buffalo Bills. But I do think they're going to push for that second or third wild card.
So you think Jared Sims the one of the future?
I'm not saying he's definitely.
Or just this year, just this year.
I think he's going to be there for this year. But I think Bill's going to pull off some sort of magic and probably get like Trevor Lawrence and Tua in the same deal. But
Tua?
No, because he's Bill Belichick. He'll do what he wants. But I mean, we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, they're definitely going to be a team that it's going to be either an absolute failure or somehow greatness.
Definitely. It's a hit or miss with them.
They're going to be a team to watch. It's going to be really fun to watch in the AFC East because Buffalo looks good, but we've never seen them compete like truly.
Josh Rosen's still young. He's got a playoff game.
Yeah. What about Josh Rosen? Do you think?
Josh Allen. My bad.
Right, Josh Allen. But speaking of Josh Rosen, do you think he could have any implications now that like to the Patriots, like a trade or something? Or I know the Dolphins would never want that to happen, but if they have to cut him, do you think the Belichick Patriots would have to?
I don't think Josh Rosen's the kind of character. I don't think Josh Rosen's the kind of character, to be honest, that would fit with a Bill Belichick type of team. Like, I think he's got a chance to be good. He's been dealt with the worst of circumstances any rookie quarterback and a second-year quarterback could have in his first two seasons. He had some terrible, terrible teams. But I think that, like, after he got drafted 10th, he said, there's 9 mistakes ahead of me. I think he's a bit too cocky. And I don't mean that as a bad thing to him. I just don't think that's a good fit with a Bill Belichick team.
He has a strong attitude. Effect and attitude. So I definitely agree.
All right, moving on. I think we're ready to move on.
Oh yeah.
Following the decommitment of three of their top prospects for this upcoming season in Jalen Green, Dacian Nix, and Isaiah Todd from their respective colleges to the NBA G League to go and earn money at a professional level, the NCAA has created a rule that will allow players to earn money from certain endorsements. Do you see this? I see this as a sign of fear from the NCAA. They're scared they're going to lose all of their prospects.
Right, because these top NCAA basketball prospects are just going to start a whole wave of athletes moving to the G League or any other league they can to earn money before instead of college.
We've seen sports, a few players do that already. We had LaMelo Ball and RJ Barrett go play in Australia and New Zealand. Jalen Lecque went to go play in the G League for the Phoenix Suns. They were all top prospects. LaMelo and RJ are in this year's draft class, actually. I think the NCAA has to change something fast. Their basketball especially accounts for so much of their revenue. They can't afford to lose these superstars. Like, they can't afford to have the Zions and the Anthony Davises of the future skipping college completely and just going to the G League and robbing them of potential ratings. Them allowing them to earn sponsorships and endorsements for their play is I think it's very deserving for the athletes who earn the NCAA. 75% of their income is alone is earned from March Madness. I think that's a huge thing for them, especially in basketball. And it's just something the NCAA had to do if it was going to compete with.
Right. This was going to be the only way they could attract players to keep going to college and going and playing in the NCAA other than the G League and stuff. So I definitely agree with you.
I think so. If we want to move on from that, I think we can.
Do you want to move on to the NASCAR?
NASCAR, I was going to say, yes. NASCAR, earlier, a few days ago, I think it was yesterday, they announced that they plan to restart their season on May 17th in, where was it?
Darlington, Lady in Black.
South Carolina. So this is huge, first of all. This is completely unexpected. It's out of the blue for me. I didn't think that anything was going to reopen up until like June or July. This is huge, not only for NASCAR, but this might have implications for other leagues that they want to follow suit. The NBA, the NHL, MLB, if they want to start and resume their seasons in certain revenues. Did NASCAR say they were going to just continue the season or just this race was going to be on?
As of right now, they have this May 17th race at Darlington, and then in the next weekend they have a race at Charlotte Motor Speedway.
Which and then is after where? That,
Charlotte Motor Speedway in Charlotte, North Carolina. Right. And I believe after that, too, they're probably going to start racing in Texas again because Texas is beginning to open up again. So I definitely think they're definitely going to start opening up more and more races. So I think they will continue to the season and just go from there. Cause it's not really a physical sport as besides the crew members and stuff.
And the crowds. Are they doing it with no fans?
They're doing it with no fans.
Okay. That's better. I think.
True contact is going to be the spotter stand and then the pit crews and stuff. So, yeah. But the drivers don't have any contact unless they're in any fights or anything. So I think this is one of the first sports that we'll be able to. And then I think this can also be a bridge to other sports beginning to open up and start as well.
I think so. But me personally, I'm just not a fan of it. I think that for states to be opening up so early is just completely just unwarranted. We don't have to do this. We're risking lives, I think, at this point. Even in NASCAR, like where it's not a contact sport at all, these drivers, like, I don't know much about NASCAR, but I know that these drivers, they're in a compressed area, right? They have to, like, there's no doors to the cars, I don't believe. They just climb in. It's a very small, no air area, and so they're sweating a lot. I know NASCAR drivers can lose, like, how many is like 5-10 pounds in a race?
Some lose at least like 20 pounds.
Yeah, exactly. They lose a lot.
It's a very strong to the body sport.
Yeah, but it's a lot of sweating. It's a lot of action there. And then when the pit crew is in there, even if they're not directly going into the driver's seat, which I don't think they will, they're still around the driver. I don't know if the windows are ever open during pit stops.
No, for the NASCAR, they have a window net that they put up and they basically leave up besides, like, needing to do driver changes or anything, which rarely happens unless the driver's already sick and stuff. So
it's got it's got holes in it?
Right, it has holes and stuff, but all the pit crew wear masks and stuff too, like covered helmets. So I wouldn't be too concerned for the driver other than a weakened body after the race and stuff and then meeting with crew and stuff.
Yeah, I think
once they get out of the car, but during the race, I think the drivers would be fine. I would be more worried about the pit crew and stuff because they're still sweating a lot with all their gear on and movement, and they're actually having physical contact with one another. So that's who I.
NASCAR is probably the safest sport to reopen at this point. So in that regard, I don't think that other leagues should start following suit until they have a plan in place. They've got players to agree to quarantine themselves for at least a limited amount of time in order to ensure that they don't have the virus following games. You got the NBA, it's a very physical sport. NHL is even more physical. Baseball, not as much, but you got guys in the locker room in the dugout that are like high-fiving, just chilling out with each other. Mm-hmm. I think that sort of contact we should try and stay away from or at least limit to certain areas and limit the travel of such leagues. So I think the NASCAR doing this, it could be great. We'll see how it goes. If they have the measures in place to prevent spreading of this virus, that's great for them. It's an awesome, awesome way to get them restarted. But I don't think that other sports should follow suit until further review.
To add on to the NASCAR thing too, Ryan Newman has been cleared to race after his scary crash at Daytona during the Daytona 500 in February. He's been cleared to race again. And then also Matt Kenseth, the previous driver of the number 20 Joe Gibbs Racing car, will be driving for the 42 of Chip Ganassi Racing to take Kyle Larson's spot, as we mentioned in the previous video or podcast that he suspended was fired for – suspended and definitely fired for racial slurs. So,
yeah.
This will be fun to see the veterans come back in there. But also another thing I saw this week that – baseball, another rumor is that they will have three divisions, an East, Central, and West. In the West division, they're going to have a group of teams all based in the West Coast in Western United States play in Arizona at all the spring training facilities there because there's multiple ballparks and stuff. And then in the Central, they'll have all the Central United States teams like the Rangers. They're going to play in Dallas because the Rangers now have Dallas or Texas overall because they have the Globe Life Field, the new Ranger Stadium, Globe Life Park, the old Ranger Stadium. They have Dr. Pepper Ballpark in Frisco, Texas, their Texas Rangers AA affiliate. They also have numerous other stadiums and colleges throughout the state, like Minute Maid Park of the Astros, which is just a few hours away and stuff. And then also for the East Coast, they will have teams play at all the spring training facilities in Florida, which are home to like the New York Yankees, and they'll have Tampa Bay Tropicana Field open for players to use. And so this is definitely something. Do you think this could be a thingy of the future for MLB?
Oh, one question real quick. So when they align it like East, West, Central, is it like AL East and NL East together, or is it strictly geographic?
No, it's like the Rangers would play in the Central part, but the Angels would play in the West.
Yeah.
Oh, it's going to be based on geographic location.
All right. Again, like, I'm not a fan of any state reopening.
I don't think they should do this, like, with you. I'm surprised, like, our state of Texas is opening up, like Florida. I believe on May 1st that restaurants and many retail stores are allowed to open to 25% capacity, which I'm personally shocked by, and I'm definitely concerned because we don't know what could happen next. Like, I know some other countries haven't had second spikes, but the U.S. could, and I'd just be concerned about this for sure.
Same here. I don't think it's a good idea to do this. Like, I've heard that the curve is flattening, but that doesn't mean we should just stop our security measures altogether. We have to keep this up for a while, or at least quarantine the players if they're going to be playing with each other, playing in these leagues, playing in these games. But yeah, I'm just not a fan of the whole idea as a whole, but if they can find a way to make it work, find a way to encourage isolation among the players, then yeah, it could work.
Right. These areas, there's lots of hotels and stuff too. So I think that's one of the reasons they considered these areas, because there's been so many tourism. They're high tourism spots, so they would be able to make their players stay in separate rooms and just be separate from each other. So I think that's one of the other main reasons. But I definitely would be shocked if this started anytime soon.
For sure. All right, I think we can move on from that, and you had some on this day trivia for today.
Okay, so on this day in 1903, the New York Highlanders, which are currently the New York Yankees, played their very first home game at Hilltop Park in 168th Street, like at their very first stadium ever, and they beat the Washington Senators 6-2.
All right. Oh, that's April 30th, by the way, is today's date.
Yeah, April 30th. My bad there.
That's right.
And then another thing is, in 1910, Cleveland Indian ace Addie Joss wins the second no-hitter, beating the Chicago White Sox, which no-hitters are unheard of, so this was quite
back
a
then. Back then.
So was, for his second no hitter, this is crazy for.
Wouldn't they be more? Back then, were there weren't a lot of no hitters. Kind of weird because back then was the dead ball era. Compared to today, when everything's juiced and like you can tap a ball and it'll go 400 feet.
Uh huh. Right.
Back then,
and they had people like they had the superstars in that area too, like Shoeless Joe Jackson and stuff like that. Like the Chicago White Sox were one of the top teams, I believe, too. In 1909, was it that
1909
that scandal happened? Didn't they?
Oh, 1919 was the White Sox scandal, the Black Sox.
Oh, okay, yeah, 1919. So
1919.
This was they were beginning to enter their era of greatness during this. So that was much pretty good no hitter right there.
Yeah, for sure. Is there anything else?
There wasn't much else. There was the first official soccer game between neighboring countries of Belgium and Netherlands, and then and the Dutch. And the Dutch won 4-1 at Olympic Stadium. So,
in what
other
year?
Than that, 1905.
All right.
There wasn't that much stuff on the day.
Yeah, the only real thing that would happen around this time is the first round of the NBA playoffs, and like the conclusion of the MLB first month. But even those are pretty they pale in comparison to like the coming months. May you've got the NBA playoffs and the NHL playoffs in full swing. You got a lot of other stuff. June, you're going to have the NBA draft. I'm not sure when the NHL draft is. I think it's sometime around then. And then you got
– I believe they're almost the same date. Like,
yeah, and then you got the MLB All-Star game the next month. So there's going to be a lot more excitement for this section of our podcast in the coming weeks, but today's not the best day for it.
Right.
So moving on to our trivia questions, this week's is based on the NBA playoffs, which would have started a week or two ago. Obviously, nothing started. We don't know what's going to happen, but we have our trivia, and so you can go ahead with your first question.
What NBA player has appeared in the most NBA playoff games?
Derek Fisher. I know this off the top of my head.
How many games?
Is it... Wait, I gotta think about this one. I know LeBron is second. So, and I think he's like four, not like a couple games behind him. So, LeBron played in how many playoff games? I'm trying to think here. I think his first season he played in, his first season in the playoffs, he played in, I think, 13 playoff games because they won in six and lost in seven. The next year, I'm gonna say they played around 20-ish because they made the finals. So that'd be around like 36, 35, 40. And then the next couple years, he played like 10, 15 games. So that's about 70, 80 games. I think he would play, well, I'm going to say 247.
59.
259?
Yeah, Derek Fisher.
Okay, yeah.
And the notable other person is Tim Duncan with 251. Yeah. But LeBron James is the highest current player.
LeBron is second or third?
On the site I am on, it says he was fourth, but I believe this is outdated. Okay. LeBron.
I'm not sure.
I believe this was outdated, so.
We'll see. Yeah.
I mean, Land of Basketball a trustworthy site?
It's trustworthy.
Okay, so Land of Basketball, they have him fourth at 239, and then they have Robert Horry at 244.
Right. Yeah, Fisher and Horry were two guys. They were role players, but they tagged on a lot of championship teams. Horry obviously won 8 rings, played with the Spurs and the Lakers. And
One crazy thing is I'm looking at this and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar is fifth with 237, and he had 18 playoff appearances, and LeBron only had 13 at this point. When it was recorded, and he was only 2 ahead. So that is crazy how many more of success LeBron had in the playoffs.
I mean, Kareem's had his fair share of success. He's got 6 rings. Right, I think it's just a product of the expansion of the playoff field, I think.
Yeah.
I'm not
and
sure.
Like
how many
more
rounds.
Games and stuff.
Yeah,
and
I know they expanded the first round since then to best of 7 instead of best of 5. I think they expanded it from 3 to 4 rounds. Not 100% sure, because I think at least early on in Kareem's career, the playoffs were a lot shorter.
Right. Uh-huh. You see a lot of Lakers stars and Spurs stars. And same for the Bulls on this is they all had their great eras. And same for Celtics, even. You'll see some of those guys.
Yeah. All right, so my first question is, there have been 3 8 seeds to defeat 1 seed since the NBA's first round expanded to a best of 7. One was the Warriors beating the Mavs in 6 in 2007, the Grizzlies beating the Spurs in 6 in 2011, and who was the last one to do it?
Wait, what year was the Spurs one?
2011.
Was it Denver?
No, it was not.
What round is this?
First round. It's the 8 seed beating the 1 seed.
Oh, yeah, yeah. What year was this? 2011?
2012. The Spurs 2012? Was 2011. Yeah, this was the last time this ever happened.
2012.
I'll give you a hint. This series is more famous for an injury.
Kings?
No. It was actually, can I say it?
Sure.
It was the 76ers beating the Bulls in 6 games in 2012. This was the year after Derrick Rose had won his MVP, had another great season, and he tore his ACL in the fourth quarter of game 1 and ended up missing the rest of the playoffs. The 76ers would win that series in 6 and lose in 7 in the next round to Boston.
Sixers were 8 seed back then?
Yeah, that was like one of the
I knew
last
they were bad, but I didn't think they tanked that they were that bad of it.
I mean, it's still playoff. It's still playoff. Like it was like right after that they just began sucking really bad.
Yep, okay, yeah, you're right.
Yeah, like right after that they just fell off a cliff. They lost Drew Holiday and Andre Iguodala, and it was just gone from there.
That's where they went on their all-out tank and got Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons and all those guys.
It's the biggest tank of all time. All right, your next question.
You'll probably get this too.
All right. We'll
what
see.
Coach has the most NBA championships in total?
Oh, that's pretty easy. That's I was thinking Red Auerbach, but I don't think so. It's Phil Jackson.
Yeah, Red Auerbach's second.
And yeah, Phil Jackson's got 11.
Yeah,
he has the 6 with the Jordan Bulls,
and 6 more with the
5 with the Lakers. So he's got championships from 91 to 93. 96 to 98 with Jordan's Bulls, and then Kobe and Shaq won it from 1999, I think, to 2001.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then he won it with Kobe and Pau Gasol in 2009 and 2010. So all the championships are back-to-backs.
He actually won 2002, too.
So it was 2000 to 2002. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
It's the 1999 season, 2000, yeah.
Yeah, and then Red Auerbach has 9 all with the Boston Celtics, and then
after that,
it's quite a big drop off to John Kundal with the Minneapolis Lakers.
Yeah,
which was way back then and now, and then Greg Popovich with the Spurs.
Auerbach, he had like all his big with Bill Russell. They won 11 in 13 years, but I remember Auerbach wasn't the coach all of those years.
Yeah,
yeah, but he was one of the pioneers of strategy. In modern basketball, which player has the most points in playoffs history? With how many?
What player has the most points?
Yeah.
In playoff history.
Yep. Don't Google it, bro.
Oh yeah, that's easy, LeBron.
Yeah. With how many?
Just under 7,000. No, yeah.
Yeah.
Just under 7,000.
6,911 points. He's one of three players in NBA history to have 40,000 points combined regular and playoffs, the other two being Kareem and Karl Malone.
So, and then Jordan's second, right? With just under 6,000.
Yeah, I think Jordan's second. LeBron's got way more playoff points than anyone else. He's obviously played more games than Jordan, but. He's only taken less shots, and compared to everyone else, he's played like this. Not the same amount of games. He's still played more, but he's never been a shoot first guy. So for him to be such a prolific scorer is really impressive.
Okay.
You'll
also get this one, too.
All right.
Just because you're a fan.
All right.
What is the longest consecutive playoff appearance by an NBA franchise?
Oh, I know this. It's tied between the 76ers, And with the years, I can't remember. I think it was 19, I'm going to say 50. I know
It was
it's
the 50s.
the 50s, right?
Yeah, it's the 50s.
57 to 50, 79.
I believe it's 1950 to 70. I believe so.
Yeah, it's 22 years, and then the Spurs did it
Right. The
from
Spurs did it from 99
1997
to
to 2019.
Yeah.
They probably would have missed it this year, but if nothing happens, then that streak's still alive. So that kind of sucks because I want my
Yeah,
Sixers.
I'm a Spurs fan though, so I'll take it if they cancel the season.
So
Not that
the
we'll be not that we'll be much better next year.
yeah, I mean, we'll see. We'll see. We never know what Pop is going to do.
Yeah, for sure.
The LA Lakers have made the playoffs more times than any other NBA team with how many appearances?
The LA Lakers have what?
Made the playoffs more times than any other team with how many appearances out of 70 total seasons? This year doesn't count.
This year doesn't count.
No. Even though they've already clinched.
47.
No. More.
Am I close?
Kind of. Out of 70 seasons.
52.
Close.
Am I closer?
Closer, yes.
Higher or lower?
Higher.
55.
No, it's 59 out of 70, which is really impressive when you take into account that from, I think it was,
That's well over half.
yeah, that's a lot. Like, they've
That's
dominated.
almost two-thirds of the NBA era they've been in the
59
playoffs.
out of 70 seasons. It's insane. If
That's
I'm not,
incredible.
yeah, if I'm not wrong, I think it was 14, 15, 16, 17. From 2012 to 2018, they missed the playoffs 6 straight years. And if you don't count that, they've only missed the playoffs 5 times in their history, which is really insane. Other than that, this past decade, that stretch.
Yeah, that's incredible.
It's really insane. They've been good for at a high level for a very long time.
For sure. Like they've always been one of the super teams of the NBA. Like
For
that's one of
sure.
the teams everybody knows of.
And probably the most famous team in NBA history,
It's
maybe.
basically them and the Lakers, pretty much. No, them and the Celtics. Them and the
Yeah.
Celtics.
I would say the Lakers and the Yankees are probably the two most famous North American sports teams.
Oh, for sure, definitely, yeah.
I think that's going to cap it off if that's all good with you.
Okay, for sure. I just want to do a shout out to Trey Mancini. I know he's dealing with
Oh,
cancer,
yeah, for
so
sure. Trey
let's give him a
Mancini.
shout out and stuff.
Prayers to him. He's got stage 3 cancer. He's going through chemo with he's the first baseman, I think, for the Baltimore Orioles. Prayers to him. Hopefully he can get better. Maybe not come back for this season, but hopefully we can see him back in action sometime in the future.
For sure. We're with them. So
Yes, definitely.
that's it for today. Thank you for listening.
Thank you for listening to the Gonfalon and Gadowski Sports Podcast, and we are out.